I love that song. Anybody else? That's one of my favorites. I love that song. You know, the things he sings about at parties and caroling and kids jingle belling and all that. What could be better, right? Except for when it's not. Reality sometimes doesn't quite match the song. It fails to mention for us that there'll be crowded shopping malls and no parking spaces and limited quantities of what you want to buy and traffic congestion and lots of cooking and baking to be done and bills waiting to be paid when it's all over. Most wonderful time of the year, right? And of course, then during this time of the year, you come to church. And we don't always help with this either, because you come to hear the story about sweet baby Jesus, little 8-pound, 6-ounce newborn infant Jesus. Anybody know that movie reference with his golden fleece diapers? First service got that one. You know, that's what you want to hear, right? You come and you just tell me the Christmas story, and you hear things about stop being so materialistic and, you know, focus on other things and all, you know, and church just kind of adds to it. We tell you what not, don't do this, don't say this. Or maybe you just hear this song and you think, nope, not for me, it's not, because Christmas is going to be difficult. Things have happened this last year that have caused this year to not be as special or as good or as great as it has in the past. Losses in our lives, job changes, difficulty, money situations, all these things can have an impact. And instead of thinking to ourselves, this is the most wonderful time of the year, we think, really, God, help me get through this. I hope I survive. That happens. Today, what I want to do is, if it's possible, is just to spend a few minutes and set aside some of those burdens that we're carrying. The difficulties, the challenges, those things. I'm not telling you to ignore them or they're telling you that they don't exist. No, they're very real. But I want you to stop thinking just for a moment and see if we can put that aside and think. Don't think about how much you've spent or how much you've not spent or maybe the shopping list that's still left to be bought for. For the Clarks, it's I put out of my mind the miles and miles that we will be traveling in the upcoming week. Set those things aside. I want us to look at, though, why is this called the most wonderful time of the year? Maybe even for a reason that Andy Williams doesn't even sing about. You know, I think as we get older, and maybe I'm just speaking for me, but it does get a little bit more challenging. I think with my kids and grandkids, or even when I was a kid, and I remember the excitement of Christmas morning, the emotion, the anticipation. It was almost, you know, palpable. It was in the air. You could feel it, almost tangible. But then we grew up, and things got out of control, and Christmas lists took over, and credit card bills piled up, and cynicism set in. Oh, my. We have a visitor here with us this morning.
Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Santa, what are you doing here?
Well, even Santa loves going to church for Christmas, and I figured I may as well come while I'm in the area. Bring some Christmas cheer for everybody. Oh. You know, the holiday's not all about me.
Well, that's true.
So I've got some early Christmas gifts for some good little boys and men and women in the audience today. Jeremy, I know you don't brush your teeth as much as your mom would like. Here's some duct tape. You can use that in a joke, I'm sure. All right, I got lots of goodies. I gotta decide who gets what. There's a toothbrush for you and a toothbrush for you.
Wow.
Sorry, Mary, you didn't make my list. Clint, you work hard. Make sure that you smell good when you come home. We're gonna wanna do that. What have you, oh, I know you love to clean dishes, right? Perfect gift, your favorite thing ever, and some batteries? I'm sure somebody will want that. I've got some other gifts in here that are special for people. I want to make sure that the hemorrhoid cream gets to the appropriate gentleman. I saw you at your doctor's appointment. You're welcome. And I saw your senior adult gift. And I just got to tell you, we've got to make sure you're prepared after all that wonderful time in the bedroom. So, lastly, I know, sorry, Susan, you didn't make the list, but your puppy did. I hope you enjoy. That's it for now. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks,
Merry
Santa.
Christmas.
Thanks for coming. I didn't realize Santa was so snarky.
Hey, girl, how are you doing?
Let's mute his microphone. Santa does not realize his microphone is still live, I don't think. Just in case, I thought I heard him. We don't want to know what's being said by Santa out there. Wasn't that nice and fun? You know, hopefully it brought a smile to your face today. And, you know, what I want to tell you today is a very simple message. And it's this: regardless of what's happened in your life over the last year, the highs and the lows, the challenges and the difficulties, that Christmas really is, and it still is, the most wonderful time of the year. It's a time for celebration and a time for joy. And in order for us to understand that, we really have to go back to the very beginning. Normally, we would put these verses on the screen, but today I'm going to take you back to my experience growing up. I remember going to my mama and papa's house as a kid. We went every Christmas morning, and before we could open the presents, my dad, when you're the pastor, you're kind of the designated Bible reader and prayer at all family functions. And so my dad would pull out the Bible, and he would turn to Luke chapter 2. And as all the kids and grandkids sat around in my mama and papa's house, we would listen together to the Christmas story. And so I want to share that with you today. So just sit back. You don't have anything to read. I just want to read this to you. It says this: in those days, Caesar Augustus issued a decree that a census should be taken of the entire Roman world. This was the first census that took place while Quirinius was governor of Syria, and everyone went to their own town to register. So Joseph also went up from the town of Nazareth in Galilee to Judea, to Bethlehem, the town of David, because he belonged to the house and line of David. He went there to register with Mary, who was pledged to be married to him and was expecting a child. While they were there, the time came for the baby to be born, and she gave birth to her firstborn, a son. She wrapped him in cloths and placed him in a manger because there was no guest room available for them. And there were shepherds living out in the fields nearby, keeping watch over their flocks at night. An angel of the Lord appeared to them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were terrified. But the angel said to them, "Do not be afraid. I bring you good news that will cause great joy for all the people. Today in the town of David, a Savior has been born to you. He is the Messiah, the Lord. This will be a sign to you. You will find a baby wrapped in cloths and lying in a manger." And suddenly there was a great company of the heavenly host appeared with the angel, praising God and saying, "Glory to God in the highest heaven, and on earth peace to those on whom his favor rests." When the angels had left them and gone into heaven, the shepherds said to one another, "Let's go to Bethlehem and see this thing that has happened, which the Lord has told us about." So they hurried off and found Mary and Joseph and the baby, who was lying in the manger. When they had seen him, they spread the word concerning what they had been told about this child, and all who heard it were amazed at what the shepherds said to them. But Mary treasured up all these things and pondered them in her heart. The shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all the things they had heard and seen, which were just as they had been told. As we read through that story, it's very clear that something very significant took place this Christmas day. Something very significant that the angel says that what he is about to share with the shepherds isn't ordinary news. This is good news, great news, that as soon as the people hear it, will transform their lives. It will be something that within them causes great joy for all the people. So I was thinking about that this week and how we want this to be the most wonderful time of the year. Really, it comes down to the joy that we have. But as I read through this, I thought, I wonder if we fully understand the type of joy that the angels were talking about that we can have in our lives. And so I want to just point out this very simple message today is just what is joy and how we can have joy. The first thing I noticed in this is that joy is not some man-made emotion. And I think that's a challenge for many of us because we think we have to generate the joy that we have, that we have to do something in order to experience the joy, or that our joy is based on how well life is going, or if only good things are happening. And so we may try to work ourselves up into a frenzy, and that may work for a time and give us happiness, but eventually we know that reality will probably set in, and we realize that what we thought was joy, the thing that we could work up, really isn't joy at all. It's just a sad counterfeit. You see, there is something about the joy that the angels are talking about that has to transcend just mere happiness. And as I think about joy, it has to be something that goes beyond with happiness, that includes happiness and gladness, but with peace and contentment. And in order to get that, we have to understand that I can't give it to you, that you can't give it to you, that it has to come from outside ourselves, something outside ourselves, or someone outside ourselves. And that someone is Jesus. In John chapter 15, verse 11, Jesus is talking to his disciples. He's just spent some time sharing with them how to find, how to follow him, to obey. He's taught them how to live. And in John 15, 11, Jesus tells his disciples, he says, I've told you these things so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. And we have to understand that the joy that we're talking about here comes from somewhere else, is given to us, and it's the joy that Jesus brings. And now sometimes we don't always think that way, though, that Jesus is joy. Sometimes when we see pictures of Jesus, what do we see? We see a very whitewashed, clean, clear vision of Jesus, almost holier, you know, just, oh, kind of thing with the halo above, and he's very staunch and rigid. I don't know. I didn't grow up seeing a lot of pictures of Jesus running around with kids or laughing or smiling. And when we read about Jesus in the New Testament, though, we see that that's a distorted image of Jesus. Because Jesus did laugh. He went to parties. He celebrated. And Jesus came to bring us joy. And I know that many of us maybe didn't even grow up with that idea that you can have joy in the church. I mean, sometimes we associate church with just the opposite of joy, hardship and pain and difficulty. I mean, maybe you grew up in the church like I did, where if you started to have a little bit of fun, somebody'd look at you and go, stop having that fun. This is the house of God. You put a smile on, be happy. Anybody else grow up in that church? I'm over it, really. I'm not that scarred. But we laugh about that, but sometimes that's what happens. As we come into church, and instead of church being a place of joy and celebration and enjoyment, it can be the most depressing place in the world to be. I can remember 7 years ago, this month, where we were in this transition. And things were not great at Ashworth. I don't know if any of you were, maybe because I was on staff, I was experiencing more things than anybody else. But I can remember, this wasn't a place I wanted to be. Not on Sunday mornings. I got paid to be here. And I remember sitting down with one of our deacons at the time, and as we were talking about just how to navigate some of the changes that we were going through, I said to her, I just looked and I said, look, I said, something has become very clear to me the past few weeks. This is not a place I want to be. It's not a place I think anybody wants to be. And we're going to change that. Because if there's one place in the world that we should find joy, that we should want to be, it's around one another here together as the community of faith. And we set forth in that moment to begin to say, how do we do that? How do we make this a place of joy? Because I don't want, yeah, my kids, you can tell them to stop running. That's great. They shouldn't be running in a building. But do it with a smile on your face. And my kids will be the ones running. I get that. But we can do this. We can enjoy being together. And church should be a place where people come in and they feel joy and love and peace and acceptance from being here. And the reason we do that is because Jesus does that. Jesus came to bring joy. He did not come to destroy any fun and laughter and joy. No, he didn't do that. You see, I think somewhere along the way, we assume that joy and the happiness and the peace and those things that smiling, we assume that can't be very spiritual because spiritual people look so depressed. And that's just not true. It's not true at all. Somewhere we believe that the story of God, the story of us and God is the story of an angry God who is so mad at the world that he can't wait to destroy everyone. And Jesus didn't come to destroy. He came to give life. And part of being having life is having joy. You know, right now it is wildly popular among some theological circles to emphasize the wrath of God. I guess that makes us holier when we talk about that a lot. I went to school with some of these people, talked with some of these people. They love the wrath of God. What kills me is I can tell you this, if your theology emphasizes the wrath of God more than the love of God, you have bad theology. Because the wrath of God doesn't get us to joy. The Christmas story is not God exacting his revenge on his creation because we've screwed it up so bad. The Christmas story is the story of God's love come to bring us hope and healing to the creation that he cares so much about that he was willing to step into this creation himself personally to do for us what we were incapable of doing. And let me just tell you, if that makes you sour, you don't understand it. But when you hear the message of Christmas and you understand that it is God who loves you so much that has come in flesh to rescue you, how can that not put a smile on your face? How can that not create within you a joy that is unquenchable? Just cannot be extinguished because it's the best news we could ever hear, ever. And when we extend that out, we begin to understand that this news tells me that instead of looking at me and God going, good grief, Brent, you just continue to screw up over and over again. I am done with you. I'm throwing you away. Instead of that, it shows me a picture of a God that says to me, Brent, you're worth saving. And you know what? It's not just Brent that's worth saving. You are worth saving. You are important enough for God to send the angels to announce the birth of Jesus. You are important enough for God to take on human flesh, to empty himself of his glory, to come and take on human flesh, to be a servant, to die on a cross. And God says, you know what? You are important enough for that. God loves you that much. And you know what that does? It shouldn't make us feel guilty. It should make us feel joy. Because there is nothing in the world that treats us the way God does. There is nothing that unconditionally loves us and accepts us the way God does. There is nothing that can give us the joy like God does. And God's saying that to you and to me today. And if that doesn't make our heart sore, nothing will. But it depends on whether or not our joy is found in something we're trying to create, or if it's something outside of ourselves and we see that is Jesus is the true source. Now, because Jesus is the source of our joy, we can also know this. Joy is not dependent upon our circumstances. And I think this is what sets it apart from the emotion of just happiness, because we can get happy and sad depending on what happens to us. We get a promotion, we're happy. That promotion creates a lot of stress in our lives. We get sad. We buy a new car, we're happy. And that kid or grandkid picks up a rock from the yard and takes it and just scratches it all the way down the length of that car. We're sad. A little bit angry too, but we're sad. And we find that joy is different. I'm not saying we won't be sad at times. I'm not saying we won't have difficulty. But what I'm saying is that the joy that we experience, if it comes from somewhere else, means that regardless of what comes in my life, I can keep my eyes focused on Christ and I can experience a level of joy. Doesn't mean you're going to jump up and down and throw a party all the time, but it's a peace and a joy and a happiness and a contentment that can get you even through the most difficult circumstances in your life. At 22 years old, Carrie and I go to a normal OBGYN visit for her because she was pregnant. She was 6 weeks away from delivering Hannah, or 6 weeks away from her due date. They come in, they say, uh-oh, we got a problem. Sit right here, lay on your side. We'll be back in 20 minutes to take your blood pressure again. They come back in and they say, we need you right now immediately. Don't pass go. Don't collect $200. Don't go home and pack a bag. You need to go to the hospital immediately. Things aren't right. 22 years old, 6 hours away from family, trying to not knowing what's happening. 22 means we were pretty stupid, which was probably what got us through it, to be honest. But here we go. We go to the hospital. They're waiting for us. They get Carrie in. They start stripping things and start hooking up monitors everywhere. And we're just saying, what's going on? It was a terrifying moment in life. She was preeclampsic, and so they had to monitor her for a week. 5 days we were there, they said, we can't wait any longer. The baby has to be delivered. She was born 3 pounds, 14 ounces. We had no idea what was going to happen. But through that, through our community of faith, through our faith in Jesus Christ, we were able to get through that. And we didn't throw parties, but there was a sense of joy and peace and contentment that was able to get us even through that most difficult moment. Author John Ortberg writes this. He says, one test of authentic joy is its compatibility with pain, because joy in this world is always joy in spite of something. Boy, isn't that profound? We have this crazy messed up idea that to have joy means to have perfection, to have no difficulty. I don't know about you. Anybody got that life going on? If you do, let me know. I want to sign up. It doesn't happen. There's difficulty, there's hardships, there's trial. And so what we have to do is figure out how to have joy in spite of what's happening. If we don't find joy today, we won't find it at all. Because if we're waiting until conditions are perfect, we'll be waiting even till the moment that we die. And if we can't wrap our minds around this, it might indicate we need a new and better definition of joy. Not one contingent upon everything going our way, but one in spite of everything going our way or not. As I read this story this week, I also noticed this about joy that I don't think I'd seen before. Joy can be missed. We can miss joy. You ever think, what if? What would have happened if? Go back to that story I read to you and think about, what if the shepherds would have heard the angel's pronouncement and said, that's cool. Thanks. Appreciate you telling us. And just stayed right there. They would have missed the most amazing miracle the world has ever known. Sometimes if we're not paying attention, if we're stuck looking at our circumstances, or if we're so busy that we don't have time to notice, we might actually miss the things in our lives that can bring us the most joy. And trust me when I say I understand this. Normal life gets in the way. We get tired. We get weary. The routine of everyday life can cause us to glance over the important. But Christmas means that God came near and lived among us. And that great news. And sometimes I wonder if we're not like the shepherds. Maybe this is speaking specifically to Brent. Sometimes I am like the shepherds. I need somebody to shine a bright light in my face and say, wake up, look around you, see where the joy is. Look to Jesus and see Him for your joy. So I don't want us to miss joy, but I think we can if we're not careful. I think one of the reasons we miss it, though, is because of this. Joy often comes in unexpected places, the places we least expect to find it. That was certainly the case here in this first Christmas. But how many of you parents, you've experienced this probably personally like I have. It's Christmas time. You're looking. You're going to find that perfect gift for your child. You find it. You spend way more money on it than you should have. You wrap it up, and it looks beautiful. And that Christmas morning, the kid comes down the stairs, and they're excited, and they find that box with their name on it, and they just go to town. They're ripping paper off, and they open the box, and they see the toy, and they're like, yay! And then you look next, 5 minutes later, they're over playing with the wrapping paper in the box. Anybody experience that? Man, me too. So frustrating. I should have just gotten them a box. As parents, we try. We're like, no, no, no. Look over here. No, this is really cool. This is really cool. And for some reason, the kid's like, no, this is cool. As adults, we grow up. We think we know best. We think we know where we can find these things. We think it comes from the right job, the right car, the right house, the right bank account, the right relationship. And we spend so much time looking for it. And what we see here is that, no, joy comes in the unexpected places. No one would have looked in Bethlehem for the Messiah. No one would have considered a baby in a manger to be the source of joy. And yet that's where we found it. And in the song we listened to by Andy Williams this morning, it assumes that the reason Christmas is so special is because all the singing and the gifts and the family togetherness and all that's great. But we need to stop and realize that that doesn't even exist without the Son of God being born. That's where it originates. Another reason I think we might miss it as well is because sometimes it requires action. You know, the shepherds had the light in the face. Sometimes we need those moments. But it also required them to move. It meant they had to pursue it. They couldn't just stay in the field and hear about it. And I wonder sometimes if that's how we respond in our own faith. We hear about other people's faith. We hear about other people's interaction with Jesus. And we assume that that's going to bring us the same results and the same benefit and the same joy that they have. But that's not real joy. Secondary hand information is not what it takes. It's not going to get us there. We have to move in our relationship with Jesus. We have to seek that out. We have to go and get it because that's where it is. If we don't, we'll always find ourselves wondering, is there more? We can't just assume that because somebody else experienced it, it'll translate to us experiencing it, and that's good enough. The joy that Jesus brings to us is not something we can experience secondhand. It's something that he wants you to experience firsthand on your own. And it may require action. It may require changes in your life in order to experience it. It may require to stop chasing some things and pursuing others, pursuing Jesus in order to truly find it. You know what happens if we depend on other people for our joy? If we look for them and we say, oh, I'm glad you're, man, that's great. You have a great relationship with Jesus. Eventually that turns on us. It doesn't stay that we're happy for them that they have that. In fact, it can turn to jealousy and envy sometimes, and we find it has the opposite effect that we think it will. That's because we have to experience it for ourselves. Another aspect I think that I find about this in joy is this. The great theologian Kohl's clothing store says this. I know, you're like, what did he just say? That's right. Give joy, get joy. You know what that tells you? Joy is contagious. Joy is contagious. I love this. You guys know what this means, right? When you shop at Kohl's, what do they give you? Oh, there you go. Everything I'm wearing today, these pants, this shirt, Kohl's. I love it. My favorite store. And you know what? Probably got Kohl's cash for it. There's an aspect of joy that says, look, when you're a joyful person, that will translate to others. When the shepherds saw the baby, they couldn't contain themselves. This was the most amazing thing they had ever seen. Angels in the sky, baby in the manger, all these things kind of coming about. And they're just like, woo, this is awesome. And they go and they start sharing that joy. And what happens? The people are amazed. That joy rubs off on people. Sometimes we have to realize it's not just joy that can be contagious, but also discontentment is contagious. Complaining is contagious. Let me ask you a very personal question. What happens when you walk into a room? People glad to see you? If they are, it probably tells you they see you as a joyful person. They want to be around that. If not, we may need to make some adjustments and find some joy because we want to be joy bringers in all that we do. We read through the New Testament. Jesus did this. He brought joy, and we want to do that as well. In talking with Pastor Ryan this week, as we were visiting about this message, he said he remembered he read in a book somewhere. He said it talked about how people can be thermometers or thermostats. You know the difference? A thermometer is someone who can gauge the temperature of the room, but just kind of measures it, and that's it. A thermostat can change the temperature of the room. We don't want to be thermometers. We want to be thermostats. We want to be people that in our neighborhoods, people know, man, what is wrong with Marianne? She is so joyful all the time. But you know, I don't know, that crazy woman, I just like being around her though. And you'll find that when we are the joy bringers, it does have the ability to raise the temperature of the joy of those around us in our offices, in our neighborhoods, in our dorms, wherever, in our families. I mean, were somebody traveling this week going to spend time with family? Now, I realize not everybody's family can be a challenge, but sometimes it can be. We need to take this thermostat idea and say, you know what? Somebody may try to bring me down, but you know what? I've got Jesus. I can have joy even in the trials, and I'm going to raise the temperature because I'm not going to go there. So we need to understand we can set that. We can be joy bringers. And maybe sometimes it's hard to have joy. That's true. Sometimes we get just buried under difficulty. Things happen, and that's just reality. And you know what we need to do? We don't want to go sit in a circle with those that go, woe is me. You need to sit with somebody that can help change the temperature of you as well and help bring their joy with Jesus to you. Because you know what? Nobody's perfect. Nobody has it figured out all the time. Brent is not the most joyful person 24/7. Ask Ryan, ask my wife, ask anybody that's around me. Yep, we've seen Brent not be there. Sometimes we all need somebody willing to step into our lives and help remind us, oh yeah, we can get through this. Jesus is still alive, and he still brings us joy. The last aspect is just simply this. The thing is, I read the Christmas story is an amazing reminder to me because it reminds me that God was doing something new in this moment. Jesus was coming to inaugurate the kingdom of God, to start that, but it's not over yet. You know, when I'm talking about how it's difficult sometimes to have joy, you know what the Christmas story reminds us? God's still working. There's still more to come. God will finish what he started. Has your life been hard? Has it been challenging this year? Let the Christmas story bring you joy as a reminder that God is not done yet. He will finish what he started. He is working things toward an end where there will be no pain and no hardship and no difficulty and no tears. And when he does that, I can't wait, because in that moment, our joy will truly be complete. So the message this morning is just simply this. It really is the most wonderful time of the year. It really is. So enjoy it. Celebrate it. Put a smile on your face. Remember why it's so amazing. Not because of the gifts under the tree or the decorations and all that makes it fun, but there's a real foundation to what gives us a reason to be joyful. Author and theologian Lewis Smedes once wrote this. He said, "To miss out on joy is to miss out on the reason for your existence." Wow, that's a big statement, isn't it? You were created for joy. So this Christmas season, let me just encourage you. Enjoy. Celebrate. Remember the reason we do this is Jesus Christ, and regardless of what comes, we can still have joy. I'm going to ask my friend Tim to come up, and we're going to close this morning with a little different song. You know, normally we go a little reflective and we think, you know, let's see how God's going to move. This morning, the message has all been one directional, joy. So I'm going to go ahead and ask you all to stand up. And we're going to sing this great carol. We haven't sung it yet this year, called Go Tell It on the Mountain. And my friend Tim here, who knows a little bit of how to play the piano, is going to really have some fun this morning. Are you guys good with that? So we're going to sing it out with joy and with celebration. You guys sing this with me. Here we go.